Now, on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday Morning Update.
Good morning. It is the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler. Jeff Wolf behind the console. Jane Houghton, our producer this morning. What is the crisis of the week for the Biden administration? Baby formula. Finally, the administration woke up. Now, this is something that's been in the pipeline since October when somebody came forward at Abbott Labs, but took till this week for the White House to react. They knew a little more about it in February. I mean, it's really kind of been on the front burner since February for most people, but not for the administration. So, here we go. This is what the president had to say about it this week.
If we'd been better mind readers, I guess we could have, but we moved as quickly as the problem became apparent to us. And we have to move with caution as well as speed, because we got to make sure what we're getting is, in fact, first-rate product.
He does not know what speed is. The administration does not know what speed is. You know, anytime something comes up that we all kind of thought might come up, they say they can't read minds. Remember when we had the recurrence of COVID? Well, we didn't see that one coming. So, Nancy Pelosi is on the case now, and I feel a whole lot better knowing that Nancy's on the case.
But right now, the baby's crying, the baby's hungry. We need to address it right now.
Okay, so let's cut to the chase with Elise Stefanik, the Republican representative from New York.
Today, House Republicans are here to push for action from the FDA and the Biden administration, who should have had a plan for this shortage months ago. Instead, bare shelves Biden has continued to pass the buck. Babies have been put to bed hungry, while parents are desperately trying to find alternative formulas that are often difficult to procure. This is not a third world country. This should never happen in the United States of America.
Well, that's right. So, baby formula was the crisis at the end of the week, somewhat overshadowing the inflation crisis that we've all been witnessing and feeling ourselves. Now, some of the numbers out there are just staggering as to what's going on, and also as to what's going on with the president's polling. Now, as an example, there is a Monmouth University poll out this week, 57% disapproval of the president's handling of the economy, 38% approval. In the same poll, the Monmouth poll, right direction, wrong direction. Now, you hear these polls all the time. When he came into office, the country was on the wrong direction, according to 51% of those polled. Now, 18% feel that we're in the right direction. 79% in the Monmouth poll out this week feel that the country is moving in the wrong direction. As an example, if you're traveling this summer, airfares are going to be up 18.6%, 33% year over year, just 18.6% in the last month. The producer price index, 11% year over year. It was expected to come in at 10.7. Now, the consumer price index is what we deal with. The producer price index at 11% year over year is what the producers have to deal with. Well, who gets the cost passed along to them? We do. So just wait for that producer price index to be passed along to us. Been to the gas pump recently? $4.43 a gallon. World record for Joe Biden there, $4.41 a gallon. If you're a trucker, you're paying an all-time high price of $5.55 for your diesel. Stocks on the worst losing streak since 2011. Well, now it's a priority for the president.
I want every American to know that I'm taking inflation very seriously, and it's my top domestic priority. And I'm here today to talk about solutions.
It's about time. I mean, that was this week. That wasn't like 3 months ago. That was this week. Now it's a priority. I mean, have you ever gone to a party and you're the last one there, you're really late, and the last person is leaving and you show up? That's the administration. That's the modus operandi at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. So now that inflation is a top priority for the president, why don't we blame the Republicans for everything? Now, you may have heard that Rick Scott came out with a plan. I think Rick Scott's probably running for president and getting an early start on it. So he comes up with a plan. The Republicans have not bought into the plan. There is no GOP plan. But why would we let the facts get in the way of President Biden's narrative?
They don't want to solve inflation by lowering your costs. They want to solve it by raising your taxes and lowering your income.
Well, Republicans raising your taxes is a lie. It got three Pinocchios from the Washington Post. He's keeping Glenn Kessler up nights. The Washington Post should be paying overtime to their fact checker, Glenn Kessler, for the amount of time that he has to spend listening to and reading all of the statements coming out of the White House. It's amazing what is going on. Bail reform. This is a kind of an interesting note. The president came out yesterday. He was speaking, and he was talking about bail reform, and he was flanked by our Attorney General Merrick Garland. Here's what he had to say about bail reform. Now, remember, so many of the high-profile murders that we're seeing around the country are committed by people that should be in jail. Either they're out on bail or they are out on parole, and they go out and they kill more people. But here's how the president feels about it.
I think bail reform and the negative side of bail reform is vastly overrated. The idea that if you have no ability to make bail because you're poor, it should relate to the severity of the crime and what the problem is related that you're accused of.
Yeah, it should relate to the crime, of course. When you have people that commit murder and then they're out the next day, or they're committing felonies and they're out the next day, we got a problem here. How bad is the problem? Let's go to Mayor Eric Adams in New York.
There is no fear for people carrying guns. I've never seen anything like this in my life. In all my years of policing and all my years of advocacy, and if you were to speak with senior law enforcement officers across this country, they would tell you, we've never experienced the level of total disregard and fearlessness of carrying a gun and using a gun.
And why is that? It's because prosecutors are not prosecuting felons and criminals who are using guns. It's not that hard to figure all this stuff out. Well, for a little solace, we'll turn to Senator John Kennedy. John always has a way of putting things in perspective and always seems to make me feel better. I hope this makes you feel better.
If I could sit the president down today one-on-one, and I did just listen to his comments, here's what I'd tell him. I'd tell him, Mr. President, you're a nice man. I would say, Mr. President, I know you want what's best for America. But, Mr. President, and I say this gently, you've got to stop being a chump. There's no future in it. There's no future in it for you or for the American people. You've got to go back to the White House, and you've got to fire all these wokers that don't really care about America.
Senator John Thune also helped to put it in perspective this week.
President Biden is flailing around, swinging blindly, hoping that something will land. And his latest target, of course, is Rick Scott. But the truth is, he can't defend his administration's record when it comes to the border, when it comes to energy, when it comes to inflation. There are so many things that are in crisis right now. And so he's obviously trying to change the subject.
So you would expect that Senator Kennedy and Senator Thune might have some harsh words for President Biden. You might not expect a Univision anchor to have harsh words for President Biden. Here's what he had to say. This is Luis Carlos Velez.
La responsabilidad de hacer algo le corresponde solamente a usted, presidente.
It was a scathing critique, according to the report that I am reading. It was Univision's firing line this week. Velez taking aim at Biden's speech on the economy and inflation. Carlos says people were flabbergasted by it, took the president to task for blaming everyone and everything else for the situation. He said, quoting here, this is the translation, "President Biden, please stop the blame game and face the inflation problem in this country. People just can't take it anymore. Your words today just flabbergasted us all, okay?" He called Biden's speech a, quote, "shameless opportunity to attack Republicans and more," quote, "blame game politics." And we'll play that six-second clip, and I think you can pick some of it out of it, even if you don't speak Spanish.
La responsabilidad de hacer algo le corresponde solamente a usted, presidente.
Solamente, solely on you. It is 6:20, the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. Michelle Murray's in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
So far, traffic is moving at speed on the Capitol Beltway throughout Maryland and Virginia. In Maryland, in Laurel, there is an accident to watch out for southbound on the Baltimore-Washington Parkway at 197, and that is blocking the right lane. Also, you may still find some crash activity in the district eastbound on the Whitehurst Freeway before 27th Street, though that looks like that is in the clearing stages. On 395 southbound at the ramp to Washington Boulevard, watch out for a disabled vehicle on that ramp, partially blocking it, so use extra caution there. In the district, East Street is closed between Kentucky Avenue and 15th Street in Southeast for water service repairs. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Scattered showers and storms, a good bet on this Saturday. We will see a little bit more in the way of cloud cover through the morning hours, some added sunshine through the afternoon, high temperatures today reaching the mid-70s. Keep the rain gear handy through the day, not a washout by any means, but still we will have the chance for some widely scattered showers and a few thunderstorms. Later on tonight, areas of fog, lows back into the 60s. We'll see that fog kind of hang around through the late morning hours on your Sunday. Some midday to early afternoon clearing, high temperatures warmer into the lower 80s. We'll have a good chance for some afternoon and evening showers and thunderstorms. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
66 degrees in the nation's capital, 6:22 on the Saturday Morning Update.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
It is the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler. Thank you for being with us this morning. And, you know, we were talking about the blame game and talking about the late response of the administration. And we've been talking about the things that are going on. Well, why don't we look into the future? Because we got a little glimpse into the future with Jen Psaki this week as she was closing out her role as the White House press secretary, and they have not made any official announcement where she's going next, but it wouldn't surprise us to see her over at MSNBC joining her former colleague Simone Sanders, who left the vice president's press office to go over to MSNBC and has not been faring too well in the ratings so far this week. You're hearing about the resurgence of COVID-19 and what could happen in the fall. So we're getting a little concerned about that, and the blame game is starting already, and actually the admission that the administration is going to be late on this. So they're even telling us in advance that they can't handle it. Here's what Jen Psaki said.
Well, I would say there is no plan B. While there is, you know, a limited amount of funding that we have to work with, it's very limited, and it will require us making tough choices about what remaining tests, treatments, and vaccines we can get.
So there's no plan B. We're going to have to make tough choices. You heard it. There is no plan B. They don't have a plan. Well, at least we know in advance on that one. There was a kind of troubling exchange, you might have caught this, from the Secretary of the Treasury, Janet Yellen, with Senator Tim Scott. Of course, he is the black Republican from South Carolina in the Senate. And this was kind of a back and forth they had, and it involves the abortion issue. And if you just listen to her tone and her wealth, I mean, she's in the, I don't know, double-digit millions. And you think about Tim Scott, you know, how he grew up in South Carolina from his family to head to the United States Senate. And listen to the contrast of these two.
Roe v. Wade and access to reproductive health care, including abortion, helped lead to increased labor force participation.
I was raised by a single mom who worked long hours to keep us out of poverty. I think framing it in the context of labor force participation just feels calloused to me.
There is a spillover into labor force participation. Yeah. In many cases, abortions are of teenage women, particularly low income and often black, who aren't in a position to be able to care for children.
I'll just simply say that as a guy raised by a black woman in abject poverty, I'm thankful to be here as United States Senator.
Senator Tim Scott won that one. Now, speaking of wealthy people around Washington, this one came out yesterday. Senator Elizabeth Warren reported a rather substantial book advance in her 2021 financial disclosure. She received $730,350 from Macmillan Publishing, records show. That's the book advance. Macmillan Publishing overseeing Persist and Pinky Promises, both Elizabeth Warren titles released in 2021. The money keeps rolling in. It is 6:26. It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. Coming up on the program, we'll have Jennifer Harper on next, and she's going to get into some of the poll numbers that are really sinking for the president. They just getting worse and worse and worse. We're also going to be talking with Jim Trusty this morning, our legal counsel. You know, attorney Michael Sussman goes on trial on Monday in part of the Durham probe and the allegation of providing false information to the FBI. We'll get Jim's read on that. That's coming up this morning. John Gizzi will join us, and he had an interesting exchange with Jen Psaki. That was at the going-away breakfast they had for Jen, and John got a good one in. We'll play that exchange for you coming up right after 7 o'clock this morning. Cheryl Atkinson will join us. A very troubling story about a data technician at Reuters that found some information that would kind of change the narrative on police shootings, and they wouldn't listen to him. They chose to fire him instead of pay any attention to him. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer will join us. Of course, we'll get the very latest on things going on in national security front, including the decommissioning of a number of U.S. naval ships and our lack of readiness in case we had to encounter two major conflicts in the world. Testimony on the Hill, and that was very troubling to hear that we're not prepared. And KT McFarland will join us as well, and she will put it all in perspective for us, all coming up on the Saturday Morning Update. Stay with us.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
In other news this morning, North Korea has reported 21 new deaths and 174,000 more people with fever symptoms. North Korea scrambling to slow the spread of COVID-19 across its unvaccinated population. Ukraine says Russian forces are withdrawing from Ukraine's second-largest city after weeks of heavy bombardment. Ukraine's general staff said today that Moscow's troops were pulling back from Kharkiv in the northeast and focusing on guarding supply routes while launching mortar, artillery, and airstrikes in the eastern Donetsk region. And a SpaceX rocket has carried 53 satellites for the Starlink Internet constellation into orbit. The Falcon 19 booster lifted off from Vandenberg Space Force Base in California yesterday afternoon. 6:33, Michelle Murray's in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
In the district, a couple of street closures due to the D.C. Fire and Emergency Medical Services annual parade that will be taking place. It says 10th Street closed between Constitution Avenue and Pennsylvania Avenue in Northwest, and 7th Street is closed between Independence Avenue and Pennsylvania Avenue. In Laurel on the BW Parkway southbound at 197, watch out for an accident in the right lane. And also watch out for an accident on the outer loop of the Beltway right near the Good Luck Road overpass, and that is blocking the right lane, just causing a brief delay. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Scattered showers and storms, a good bet on this Saturday. We will see a little bit more in the way of cloud cover through the morning hours. Some added sunshine through the afternoon. High temperatures today reaching the mid-70s. Keep the rain gear handy through the day. Not a washout by any means, but still we will have the chance for some widely scattered showers and a few thunderstorms. Later on tonight, areas of fog, lows back into the 60s. We'll see that fog kind of hang around through the late morning hours on your Sunday. Some midday to early afternoon clearing. High temperatures warmer into the lower 80s. We'll have a good chance for some afternoon and evening showers and thunderstorms. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
66 degrees in the nation's capital. We're at 635 on the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. It is the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler. Jennifer Harper joins us from the Washington Times. She writes Inside the Beltway and does a darn good job of it. Good morning. How are you?
Wow. Good morning. I love that greeting that she does a darn good job on it. Boy, that makes me feel good today. So thank you. And good morning, everybody.
Well, with all the problems that President Biden has, now he has an obsession with Donald Trump and MAGA, and we've heard it repeatedly this week. What is going on with our president?
It's peculiar, isn't it, that he seems to really be obsessed with Trump this week. Maybe it'll change. But, you know, he's gotten all into the whole MAGA thing. And, of course, that stands for Make America Great Again. Just most people know what that means, but I just thought I'd throw that in. But Mr. Biden is definitely having a big flirtation with MAGA, and he called Mr. Trump the great MAGA king, and he referred to ultra-MAGA Republicans and MAGA Republicans. It just goes on and on. And, you know, I was wondering, well, why doesn't he say that Trump is magnificent or magnanimous? But, well, those are my little puns of the week.
MAGA competent.
Yeah, there you go. But he also seems to have forgotten that Mr. Trump, in his heart of hearts, is still a businessman and an entrepreneur. And to illustrate that, Mr. Trump is already fundraising off of the term ultra-MAGA, which kind of turns the table completely on the White House this weekend. Mr. Trump has created an ultra-MAGA-themed T-shirt. He's using that as a GOP fundraiser. And, of course, it's got him on there in full color as a superhero. And he's flying through the air underneath the gorgeous Ultra MAGA logo. And this is what he had to say. Did you hear what Joe Biden called us? He said we were an extreme political organization. He said we were Ultra MAGA. Well, if loving your country and wanting to put America first makes you Ultra MAGA, then yes. We are ultra mega. And that was how Mr. Trump responded to all of that. And, well, also, Rick, other people have had the same idea. There's ultra mega T-shirts and hats and all sorts of things already appearing on Amazon and elsewhere. But meanwhile, we have to wonder what it all means. And I'm going to quote here from Nick Arima. He is a redstate.com analyst. This is what he had to say. The Democrats are about to get creamed big time in the midterms in November. What options do they have besides screaming about abortion, which isn't what's affecting most people's pocketbooks? What they've settled on is trying to demonize the MAGA people and President Trump, coming up with terms like ultra MAGA and calling them extreme every 15 minutes. They're concentrating on that, not dealing with inflation or doing their jobs. They have no record to stand on. So this is all they can think of to do. And that kind of struck me as, yeah, that could be true. And again, that's going to be from Nick Arima from redstate.com.
Well, exemplifying the incompetence in the White House is obviously the economy and inflation. It's been a mess. And you had an interesting take on this in the column this week.
Yeah, well, it's not just me. A lot of people are saying, what the heck are they doing? Are they actually trying to bring on a recession or what? A lot of people are wondering about that, and, you know, you may feel yourself being mystified by the whole White House economic antics right now, and there's an interesting report that has examined how Mr. Biden's radical policies are driving America towards a Biden recession and higher inflation. This is coming from the Club for Growth Foundation. Curious about that. That's a nonprofit economic growth education organization is how they describe themselves. But anyway, they have issued a new report which is gauging the chances of a recession in the near future. And the report actually came from a George Washington professor named Diana Frischot Roth, and they take into account the very latest consumer price index, which came out this week, and it's now standing at 8.3%. And the author wrote, at the beginning of 2021, America had the strongest economy in the world and was poised for expansive future growth. President Biden has taken several steps that have harmed today and will harm tomorrow the American economy and increase the likelihood of recession. Again, that's coming from George Washington University study. But let's talk about what it all means. If someone were trying to intentionally tank the U.S. economy, I'm not sure they would do anything different than what President Biden is doing on a daily basis, despite his recent attempts to blame Republicans. This is coming from Club for Growth President David McIntosh. He says President Biden's agenda includes raising taxes, substantially increasing government spending, including entitlement payments, imposing burdensome regulations on business and ordinary Americans, and forfeiting America's energy independence. To avoid a Biden recession and lower inflation, it's time for change. So if you're wondering what the heck's going on, everyone's wondering.
Jennifer Harper, inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. Follow her on Twitter at Harper Bulletin. 641 on the Saturday morning update. We'll talk to Jim Trustee next and get his read on all these Supreme Court demonstrations out in front of the justices' homes. That's next. But first, Michelle Murray's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
In Maryland, on 95 northbound at the Intercounty Connector, an accident is being reported there, so use caution. On the southbound BW Parkway at 197, accident there still in the right lane. The accident on the outer loop of the Beltway approaching the Goodluck Road overpass in Greenbelt, though, that accident moved to the shoulder, just a brief delay there. A new accident now being reported on eastbound 66 approaching Route 29 in Gainesville, and that blocks the left lane. And in Arlington, watch out for the disabled vehicle southbound on 395 at the ramp to go onto Washington Boulevard. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Scattered showers and storms, a good bet on this Saturday. We will see a little bit more in the way of cloud cover through the morning hours, some added sunshine through the afternoon, high temperatures today reaching the mid-70s. Keep the rain gear handy through the day, not a washout by any means, but still we will have the chance for some widely scattered showers and a few thunderstorms. Later on tonight, areas of fog, lows back into the 60s. We'll see that fog kind of hang around through the late morning hours on your Sunday. Some midday to early afternoon clearing, high temperatures warmer into the lower 80s. We'll have a good chance for some afternoon and evening showers and thunderstorms. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
65 degrees in the nation's capital, 643, the Saturday morning update on WMAL.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
Saturday morning update continues. I'm Rick Fowler. Jim Trustee joins us, partner at IFRA Law here in Washington. You see him often on the Fox News Channel, and he is the former chief of the organized crime and gang section at the U.S. Department of Justice. Jim, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
So Washington attorney Michael Sussman goes on trial on Monday, and he is accused of relaying to the FBI false information about a potential link between Donald Trump and Russia. And Jim, if you were to try and find the story, find out about the trial that begins on Monday, it's like not there at Google News or Bing News, the Microsoft search engine. I mean, it's like nobody's covering it, but you are.
Yeah, well, Rick, you know, apparently Johnny Depp and Amber Heard are much more important to the fabric of America than a lawyer hired by the Hillary Rodham Clinton campaign to spread a false rumor at her opponent's expense. So I'm with you. It's very frustrating that this trial doesn't get more attention. It's actually a very historic moment to have someone of the caliber of Michael Sussman on trial for peddling this defamatory story about Trump and Russia. The trial itself is going to be interesting, and I don't think it's going to take that long. You know, we're getting used to these mega trials that last for weeks. I think this is a one-week trial at the most. And the recent rulings from the judge have been interesting. The judge earlier this week basically reined in the prosecutor from running down rabbit holes that would be about, or more directly about, Hillary Clinton and her campaign and the Russian dossier. And the judge basically said, this is a false statement case. In essence, let's not overtry it. I think that was probably helpful for the government, although not great for the rest of us on the outside, because the more they went down those rabbit holes, the more you and I would see a little insight into John Durham's investigation and where it's going. So it's of mixed emotions that I report that the trial might be kind of tight and lean. But there's another thing that's factoring in recently that I think is going to be really interesting next week, and that's this, Rick. The defense is probably not going to be that Sussman never made the false statement, because not only did he make the false statement to credible witnesses who recorded it in their own way, but he even followed up with an email that said the same thing, that he was not, in fact, coming forward on behalf of a client, but he was doing it as a good Samaritan to alert the FBI. I mean, it was a pretty abject lie. I don't think he's going to fight whether he lied. They're going to fight this battleground of whether it was material to federal investigators, whether it had the potential to affect a federal investigation. And that's a pretty low bar. You notice my language about potential. That's a low bar. But if they fight that, it opens up the door for the government to put on testimony about the overall scope of the investigation. So while the judge shut down the rabbit holes on the one hand, the defense may well, or very likely, will open up with a defense that allows the government to tell us more about the Durham probe. So I think this could be a really interesting bit of testimony from a case agent, or maybe one or two case agents, about where the Durham probe has been going overall. And again, that'll touch on the two areas that I think are in play. One is how far up the chain of Hillary Rodham Clinton's campaign does it go, including all the way up to her? And does it go up through the FBI politicized management of Comey, McCabe, Strzok, and Page? So that's what I'll be listening for. I don't think there's going to be any great surprises about what the falsehood is or whether there's a real pitched fight there. But this materiality thing could make it a very interesting trial for us outsiders.
So this week, Fusion GPS, the firm that the Hillary Clinton campaign hired for opposition research, ruling by a judge said that the firm must turn emails over to the Durham probe. There was sort of a caveat on that it couldn't be used for certain things, but it can be used for other stuff. Help us understand the significance there.
Sure. Well, behind the scenes, really behind the surface of what we see as we watch these trials unfold or these indictments unfold, is probably a lot of fighting over the idea of attorney-client privilege. Which communications that involve Christopher Steele, Michael Sussman, Mark Elias from Perkins Coie from the same law firm, and, of course, Fusion GPS, which ones of these communications are considered privileged or covered by attorney-client privilege? That's a real potential goldmine of information for Durham to establish, you know, who was in the know, who was actually directing some of the behavior to put out these false stories. And so I think what we really learned from the ruling this week is that the Durham probe is alive and kicking. You know, they're still obtaining evidence that goes beyond the trials that are on the immediate horizon. So I think that's a worrisome sign for people associated with Hillary Clinton, that they are still successfully digging around for communications that could be very incriminating.
So if Michael Sussman is convicted, what's the potential for a sentence there?
Well, it's anything up to 5 years of imprisonment under the statute. But, you know, most people that are in the federal system know better than to talk about maximum penalties. It's not like he's going to max out. He's not going to get years of imprisonment. The sentencing guidelines are a big touchstone in the federal system. They're not binding, but they're really where the judge is expected to come out with their sentencing. And that's a compilation of factual things that lead to a range of expected imprisonment or probation. Here, because he's going to trial, his numbers are going to be a little bit higher. You know, the federal system rewards you for accepting responsibility, meaning pleading guilty. When you don't do that, your numbers march upwards, which means there's more potential for jail. But there's a lot of discretion for the judge overall. We noticed that in the first case that went to sentencing from the Durham trial, that was Mr. Kleinsmith, the FBI general counsel who doctored an email to help a FISA warrant get issued. He had, you know, pretty damning evidence against him that he admitted, and I think the acceptance of responsibility was probably why he didn't get any prison time, because otherwise it's a pretty offensive case. So anything's in play. His attorneys would certainly ask for probation, but the fact that he put the government to the test and went to trial makes it a little more likely that he gets the serious punishment.
So we've seen the protests at the homes of the Supreme Court justices after the leak of the draft of the Roe versus Wade decision. There is a federal statute that prohibits the intimidation of Supreme Court justices. I believe Governor Youngkin in Virginia asked the Fairfax County to enforce the law, and they wouldn't do it. 25 state attorneys general wrote a letter to the Attorney General, Merrick Garland, on Wednesday, Give us a little background on this, Jim. What's going on?
Well, it's called the breakdown of rule of law. That would be my more profound answer to your question. There's absolutely a federal statute on point. It's 18 U.S.C. 1507. I'm sitting here looking at it as we speak, and I've looked at it before. It's a very clearly worded statute that criminalizes the impeding or the obstructing of justice by way of picketing or parading at either the workplace or the home place of a judge, juror, witness, or court officer. So it's essentially a baby obstruction. It's a misdemeanor obstruction with only a potential for 1 year in prison. But it's directly on point for what's going on here. And there are also, frankly, state laws that likely apply to the conduct as well in terms of impeding traffic, impeding pedestrian egress and ingress, disturbing the peace. And this is really, I think what's most disturbing is that, you know, the leak was already a sign of a broken system, a horrible moment for the Supreme Court to have someone leak this opinion, this self-righteous leak about Roe versus Wade. And now, because the politics of the moment seem to be supporting the left, it's okay to break a federal statute and intimidate the children of Brett Kavanaugh and anybody else that's being protested right now. And I think what sticks in my craw the most in this whole thing, it's not that I necessarily want to see all these protesters locked up. This can be a basis to disperse them, to bring some peace and order back to the neighborhoods where this is taking place. It doesn't have to result in prosecutions when you have a straight-faced charge that you can kind of threaten people with to make sure that they comply. But I think what sticks in my craw the most, Rick, is just the constant unevenness of DOJ and the application of law in our country depending on politics. I've never seen anything like it, where if you throw a Molotov cocktail at a police officer in Portland, you get treated very lightly. But if you're part of January 6th, even on the outside of the Capitol, you can expect years of scrutiny and millions of dollars of resources being poured into looking at you. And now we have something where literally there's intimidation of the highest court of the land, and people turn away from it. The president could barely bring himself to condemn it. Jen Psaki acted like it's perfectly fine to do this. And no law enforcement seems to be bucking the trend of the White House in saying this is wrong. So I think it's, again, a very bad moment historically for this country that laws are being flagrantly broken, but it's considered okay because of the political bias of some of our law enforcement officers and some of our executive officers.
Can you imagine if there were hundreds of red MAGA baseball caps out in front of one of the liberal justices' homes?
Just think about it. There's been moments where either Ruth Bader Ginsburg or Sotomayor or even Elena Kagan have come out and said things that were probably pretty outrageous to a lot of conservatives in this country. But it's not in their DNA, typically, to go running over to the Supreme Court justice's house and wreak havoc. But you're right. If it did happen, it would be, you know, it would be considered the coming of the apocalypse that somebody's daring to chant outside Sotomayor or anybody else on the liberal wing of the Supreme Court. So, yeah, that's what it is. I mean, you're kind of putting your finger on the main point here, which is it's the double standard, and it's eroded our belief in the institutions of criminal justice and the law enforcement agencies that are supposed to carry it out. And it's going to take actual leadership in high places to kind of get back to even footing when it comes to law enforcement. And we're certainly not seeing it with this administration.
Jim Trusty, partner at IFRA Law. And Jim, we'll be looking forward to your analysis of these two key stories. I know you'll be on with Cavuto this morning. What, 1025?
Yep, or approximately 1025. We'll be talking about what we just covered, talking about the Supreme Court protest and my angry feelings about how that's working out.
And you can follow Jim on Twitter at Trusty Lawyer. Jim, thank you very much.
Sure. Thank you. Have a good weekend.
And you too. It's 6:55 on the Saturday Morning Update.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. A Cumulus Media Station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.